Hey, hey, hey. This is Understanding Disordered Eating with Rachel Heineman, episode 124. Now, before we jump into today's program, I am really, really excited to share that the most recent training that I gave, the one on the assessment of eating disorders, so basics of how do you detect eating disorders in your practice and what are the first things to know and do, is now available on the website for purchase. Either you can scroll down to the show notes and find it, or go directly to the website on the providers tab and it will be right there. Recently, I've been having lots and lots of conversations, some of them on the pod, some of them off the pod, on how eating disorder treatment has really failed a lot of people. And we've been having a lot of conversations about MAID, medical aid in dying, or medical assistance in dying, which is talking about severe and enduring eating disorders, for lack of a better term. And one of the most important questions with these really, really controversial topics is, how did we get to this point? And why are we not doing more to prevent people from getting to the place where they're dying and choosing to die to opt out of the pain from their eating disorder? And I think if we scale this way, 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 way back to the bare basics, to the beginning, this work lies in prevention and early detection. So if you are a clinician, if you are a pediatrician, if you are a therapist, if you are a dietitian, if you are someone who works with people, and you have the capacity to notice somebody's relationship with food that is impacting their life negatively, that either is an eating disorder or can become an eating disorder, and you have the capacity to detect it early and get this person help early, you are going to become part of the solution that helps us move away from really, really, really tough situations that none of us want to be in. So to start you off, this is the training to go to, and many more to come. Now, today's topic, we're talking about how the eating disorder community, I'll sort of lump myself in because I'm an eating disorder treatment provider, potentially took things a little too far. Now, I'm not saying that we have or we haven't. It's obviously a conversation. You know me, it's never black and white. But the question is, we are endorsing these ideas of health at every size and intuitive eating and all foods are equal and body love and all this stuff. And we're pushing the envelope to the nth degree. Are we pushing other people away? Are we pushing people away who really need to hear our message? And obviously the answer is maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I think one of the first things that we have to remember is who we're talking to. So if you think about a standard person on social media or a standard eating disorder provider on social media, we have to think about who they're talking to. Somebody might be very into body positivity for folks in larger bodies and they're promoting their stuff. And people watch that and they listen to it and they find so much validation on those pages with that information. That's great. And there are other people that are like, what? I can't believe you're pushing that somebody who looks like that can actually be healthy. That's not true. Yada, yada, yada. Now, I'm not saying that every single person who pokes holes at the information that we share is right. But I think part of this is remembering who we're talking to. And if we're trying to speak to the masses, somebody who's really immersed in, you know, eating, quote, healthy, which is actually quite restrictive, and looking a certain way, and that's expected in the larger culture, then showing them some of this information is actually going to drive them away. Again, not to say that anyone's right or wrong. Maybe there are people that are right or wrong, but not to say that. It's just that if we're starting from zero with someone, we can't really go to 100 and expect them to be completely on board. So it's interesting when people ask me this question of, are we pushing people away? It's very possible that some of this information is actually just so out of the realm of what someone feels comfortable with that it is pushing that particular person away. This perspective is not for them, at least not for right now. They're not going to buy into it coming in, entering into this point. Maybe they need somebody at a different point to speak to them, and maybe they'll resonate with that information. And it's obviously so tricky because no matter what you're talking about, somebody out there is going to have a problem with what you're saying, even if you're 100% right. Even if you're both right. Everybody's coming at it from a different point on the continuum and everybody's coming at it from a different perspective. However, I do think that a lot of people with the problem of the eating disorder treatment community has pushed the envelope way too far, actually doesn't have true information about some of the things that we talk about. One thing they say, health at every size. Well, people can't be healthy at every size. So first of all, it's not healthy at every size. Another thing that people have a problem with is intuitive eating. You can't eat intuitively. That's not the way to eat. It doesn't work, blah, 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 blah. Another thing people have a problem with is the idea that all foods are equal, which is pretty much part of intuitive eating, but they're like, all foods are not equal nutritionally. There is no evidence for that. And the other piece that people have a problem with is body love. Like, how can you say that I'm going to love my body at X size? Like, that's never going to happen. And really just turns people off. So I think it's really important to actually define what we mean when we say these things so that people can actually understand what we mean in order not to say that you guys are pushing the envelope too much. This stuff doesn't make sense. It's not backed by research, et cetera. When I think that a lot of us are on the same page, we're just talking with different words. So first of all, when someone says health at every size, automatically, for some reason, people say healthy at every size. And they're like, that's obviously not true. I agree with you. People are not healthy at every size. The idea of health at every size as like a trademark, which honestly, I'd prefer not to use for some other reasons lately. But the idea is that all bodies can pursue health if you feel like it. And all bodies deserve respect when you want to pursue health. So for example, you want to go to a doctor for knee pain or back pain, and your doctor says, well, you should lose weight as opposed to prescribing PT or, I don't know, some sort of x-rays, et cetera. And you just get none of that treatment because you're in a larger body. That's something that's absolutely ridiculous. It happens all the time. And what people are asking for is just to be treated with respect and equally across the size spectrum, which another way of saying is weight inclusive. So it's not, we're not talking about ignoring someone's weight, and we're not saying that every single person at every single size is healthy. We're saying that if you want to be able to go to a doctor, you should be able to go to a doctor without being afraid that all they're going to say is to lose weight. And also the respect piece. I mean, come on, everybody deserves respect. It's not like a controversial topic. The thing is, the way that a lot of people have interpreted this, it has become controversial. Next, intuitive eating is the only way to eat. Intuitive eating, people think, is hunger, fullness, and cravings. And that's basically it. So you start eating when you're hungry, you stop eating when you're full, and you eat whatever you feel like. And sure, that's 3 out of 10 principles. It's part of intuitive eating, but it's 30%, which is relatively small when you're thinking about the entire idea of intuitive eating. Intuitive eating is a framework of how to redo your relationship with food so that you can approach food with as much neutrality as you possibly can. So this sort of leads into the next point of all foods are equal. Obviously, all foods are not nutritionally equal. Nobody can say that. I think if anybody says that, they are not in touch with reality. What we mean when we say all foods are equal, it's all foods are morally equal, which means that you're not a good person for eating salad and you're not a bad person for having chocolate. That is literally all it means. And I think that even if we feel guilty after eating or after eating a certain type of food or amount of food, I think we can all logically agree that morally, we are not inferior to someone who doesn't do that. Maybe emotionally, that's another story. But I think a lot of us can really agree on these points when we actually define what we're talking about here. Now, I think one thing that we've talked about a bunch on the podcast here, but that a lot of people out there are not necessarily talking about, is that intuitive eating is not going to help you if you suffer from a binge eating disorder. Or if you have this quote, emotional overeating, intuitive eating will not help you. Now, what is going to help you is to restore your relationship with food and then add a lot of these principles in as bonuses and hopefully work toward this much more flexible relationship with food. And the way to do that is to start with a lot more structure in order to teach you how to eat in a healthy way. And what I mean by that is 3 meals and 2 to 3 snacks, perhaps working with a dietitian who knows this stuff, but that you have much more of a structured or an unstructured meal plan. And then you insert in very deliberate food challenges. So for example, if you have a fear of food of ice cream, or you're feeling really guilty every single time you eat ice cream, no, don't open up the quart of ice cream and start eating. That's not a good idea. Maybe structure it into your meal plan as a snack every single day to have that little mini Häagen-Dazs or Ben & Jerry's. What, does Ben & Jerry's come in a small size? I don't know. Häagen-Dazs definitely does. Or portion it out and have it with a piece of fruit every day or every other day for however long until it doesn't feel that scary to you. But I think when we present this idea to people who are struggling with their relationship with food and say, all you have to do is lean into your hunger and fullness. Well, first of all, hunger and fullness never worked for these people. So it is not going to work just to, quote, pay attention to it. And it's just going to lead someone to feel a lot more chaotic. So I think in that, yeah, maybe the intuitive eating or the eating disorder treatment community has gone too far in proposing that everybody can do intuitive eating. Not everyone can do intuitive eating, and certainly not at all points in someone's relationship with food. I think a lot of this also depends on, back to what we were saying before, it depends on who you're talking to. A lot of people who have a complicated relationship with food stems from being a little bit overly rigid, and maybe not so a little bit. Thinking about someone's restriction, I can't eat this, I shouldn't have that, I shouldn't eat that past this time, this is going to make me fat, this food is bad for you. All these sorts of rules, which then the restriction has this really interconnected relationship with binging or emotional overeating. And then it feels chaotic. But a lot of it, even if it feels completely out of control, stems from this over-rigidity. Over-rigidity? Is that a way to say it? You know what I mean. Something that we would be aiming for is a little bit more flexibility when it comes to eating. So for example, someone who has a ton of rules and just tries to push off eating, don't eat, part of what we want to do, you know, first we do the structure, of course, but part of what we want to do ultimately is to increase more flexibility, which is the messaging of people saying, like, you know, don't be afraid to have the donut, don't be afraid to have the ice cream, don't be afraid to have a sandwich 3 times a day if that's what you want. All that is to increase flexibility, increase options, and decrease guilt. On the other hand, if we're talking about someone that is completely chaotic, and honestly, now I retract what I said before about the chaotic relationship with food coming from a sense of rigidity. We just talked about the people who are overly rigid before. Now we'll talk about people who are overly chaotic. If someone has a completely chaotic relationship with food, more structure is appropriate. So we couldn't possibly take advice given to one side if it doesn't apply to you, because you might be in a completely different situation. You might need to introduce more flexibility, and I might need to implement more structure. In which case, you will have a strong reaction to the advice that actually really speaks to me. The next piece that people really like to hate on is the body love thing. And I think ultimately this is so, so much about semantics and vocabulary. It's kind of silly. Some people love the idea of being able eventually to love their body and really appreciate their body. That sounds great to them because they hate their body and they're really not able to appreciate it now. And for some people, that feels so lofty and they kind of laugh at it and they're like, haha, never going to happen. Screw the whole thing. So maybe someone like that might speak the language of body acceptance, might speak more to them than body positivity, for example, because the body positivity doesn't feel attainable. And if it doesn't feel attainable, they'll throw the baby out with the bathwater. Now, if we're thinking about this entire topic of body positivity or body acceptance, if you hate your body, you will fight it until the day you die. It will make you mistreat your body, and we only get one. So if we're fighting about semantics here, about what will speak to somebody or what's the accurate goal, then really, we're not actually looking at each individual and what this person might need to hear or how we can work with them in order to help them appreciate their body a little bit more to work with them in order to put this on the back burner because it's so loud for people. This body dissatisfaction is so front and center for people. And sometimes what we want to do is just quiet the noise. So yeah, let's work with the body that you have. Let's accept its limitations. That might be ideal, but for some people, it might just be body dissatisfaction, voice, shut up. For some people, it might be body positivity, hooray, hooray, rah, rah. But again, we have to really think about who we're talking to. So if you're talking about somebody who has an eating disorder and you start talking about body love and all foods fit and all the stuff like that, we might scare them away. But if you say, okay, one day we might work toward body acceptance, one day you might be a little bit less afraid around food, then maybe we're talking the same language and it's something that can speak to them and they might come aboard a little bit. I think that, of course, every single person has a different audience that they speak to. But I don't think that anything happens if you scare people away before they even have the opportunity to learn more. Now, let me shift for a second, talking directly to you as the person who isn't ready to hear a lot of things that people are saying and the things that you've labeled the eating disorder treatment community has gone too far. Here are some questions, because of course, we don't just talk about some of the things that are going on in this world. We help you think a little bit more deeply about why you're thinking this. What is scary or threatening to you as an individual to hear somebody who's more plus size preach weight inclusivity and body acceptance? What makes you care? What makes you riled up about it? What makes you have a really loud opinion about it? What does it mean to you? How does it reflect on you? And ultimately, what's really important here? I don't think you actually care if somebody gets up on social media and talks to their 15,000 followers about whatever works for them. You're not following millions of people. And really, you shouldn't care less. But it strikes a nerve, and it strikes a nerve for a reason. So that reason is the thing we have to come to. Now, if we take this and run with it, for example, you know, maybe you're afraid that the world will become a free-for-all and you're trying really hard to be in your lane and do the right thing and you like how the world is run. Maybe you're a thin person and you're afraid that you might not have an edge, or that when we say this whole inclusivity, like body positivity, all bodies fit, etc., we are actually excluding all the people that aren't exactly this breed of inclusive, which means that you might be on the outside now. Maybe you're afraid of being excluded. I'm not saying that this is not an actual fear or is an actual fear, but we're just taking this and running with it, like I said. In which case, that's pretty threatening. Are you having a big reaction because of some of the other things that we've talked about in terms of the food and intuitive eating? And how is it possible that all foods are equal? Again, I'm not saying nutritionally equal, but maybe you are thinking that there is a difference between some of the food companies and how they've manufactured food, and that there is going to be a major problem if we completely neglect that. And we have to think about that on a governmental regulation sort of level. Yeah, maybe that's something that you're afraid of. Obviously, you know, we can open that can of worms another time. That's for another time. You can listen to the episode on ultra processed foods with David Wiss on that. But just really thinking creatively and pushing yourself to really identify what is your question about? What bothers you about this topic? What do you want to be true? What is scary to be true? And really getting to know yourself and your sensitivities when we're thinking about this topic. For some reason, people get so heated. And before we jump on in the comment section of all people's posts and stuff, maybe ask yourself, what am I actually thinking? And what am I actually feeling? And you know what? Bonus. If you don't post that on someone's social media, send it to me, because I'm really, really curious what's threatening to you or what's scary about some of these topics to you. And why some of the people who, quote, go too far don't speak to you, and somebody who's a little bit less, quote, out there does speak to you. Because I think this is the kind of thing that we never actually get at the why and what's going on underneath. We just sort of see what's going on the outside. But I want to get to know what's going on the inside. So hit me up on this. And I also really do want to know if you think that the eating disorder community, eating disorder treatment community, has taken it too far. So send me an email. Let me know what you think.